All right, I think we're going to get started. I'd like to call to order the February 15th, 2022 Budget and Finance Commission meeting to order. Thank you, everybody, for taking time to join us this evening. Ms. Cope, may I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Beasley?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Vice Chair Salverson?
Here. Thank you. I will now lead the group in the pledge. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, again for joining us. If the public would like to address the commission on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. If there's a topic you'd like to address the commission on, please ensure that you have filled out a blue speaker card located on the back table. As with all commission meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you're an Oro Valley resident. And speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes, and we ask that you respect the three-minute limit. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic you wish to address in relation to the agenda. We want to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. So once your hand is raised, I'll ask Ms. Cote to collect your speaker card. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. Okay, now it's called to the audience. So if you'd wish to address the commission on a matter not on the agenda, please raise your hand now. No. Okie dokie. Seeing that there are no hands raised, I will close the call to audience. Staff liaison report. Mr. Gebhardt, please proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Gebhardt, for the record. I just have a few comments for the commission this afternoon. First off, budget, as you're well aware, and I mentioned at the last meeting, budget season is in full swing here at the town. In another couple weeks, we'll be conducting one-on-one interviews and with departments and going through budget requests. Just as an update, we are redoing our 10-year CIP, so that's also a pretty large undertaking for town staff. But we're making good headway there and anticipate having a good discussion with the council on Friday, which leads me into my next point, is that we will have a council retreat on Friday. That retreat is open to the public, so the public is open to listen, not necessarily participate, but listen to the discussion and participate through that that means. Additionally, as you're well aware, our chair John Latchford has resigned from the commission due to some personal matters, and we want to thank him for his service in performing the function of the chair for this last year for the BFC. He was just rock solid in adjudicating his duties, and we certainly appreciate his service. With that said, we now have two open seats on the BFC. We do have an interview scheduled for this Thursday, and so hopefully we can get those openings filled quickly. And last but not least, tomorrow is a council meeting, as I'm sure you're well aware. And the council will be having a discussion regarding the Oro Valley Marketplace. So that will be a pretty important meeting in terms of its implications on the future of the town and certainly that that parcel of that property. So with that said, I'll conclude my comments this afternoon. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gebhardt. Let's see. Allison, could you please read in item number one?
Agenda item one, discussion and action on electing a chair and vice chair for the Budget and Finance Commission.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the commission members?
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
My motion is that Kathy Salverson be the chairman and that Mike Mason be vice chair.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Can you read item number two, please?
Agenda item two, review and approval of the January 18, 2022 regular session meeting minutes.
Are there any questions from commission members? Okey-dokey, I'd like to call for a motion.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. Allison, item number three, please.
Agenda item three, presentation and discussion of PSPRS pension funding and related pension funding policy.
Thank you. We've got a presenter for the pension funding policy.
Yeah, if I can jump in just quickly, Ms. Chair. We have Clark Partridge with us via Zoom. He is from PSPRS, and he's going to do a short presentation for the commission this afternoon to update you on the status of the PSPRS police pension plan. And then we'll be available, him and I both will be available for questions at the conclusion of his presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Partridge, and go ahead with your presentation, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be with you here today. This will be a short update as to where you're at. As you know, when we had presented to the town previously, when you were considering issuing financing to cover your pension liability, we talked a little bit about the pension funding equation. And the pension funding equation is very important to really understand when you're taking actions in managing that pension liability. As you know, the money comes from, on the left-hand side, the contributions and investment income. And on the right-hand side, for the benefits and the expenses of the plan, is where the money goes. And by far the biggest number in the equation is the benefits piece. Of course, the situation the town had found itself in before was that the assets in the plan were not large enough to be able to generate sufficient investment income. So they're having to make additional contributions to make up for that. And we'll go into a little bit more depth as to why and how these pensions work. Essentially, if you look at the bottom bar here, what the actuaries do when they start to do their actuarial valuation is they take a series of assumptions and they estimate the future benefits that are going to be paid out. And of course, that's an estimate. They don't know exactly when people are going to retire, how long they're going to live, or exactly how much they're going to earn during their career, et cetera. But all of those things are estimated, and then they're updated every year with a new actuarial valuation. And so it's always truing up as you move through. And those numbers and estimates can change over time. And that's why it's important to continue to manage that. But that present value of future benefits is all the future pay and all the future service that's going to be earned. The actuarial accrued liability is all of that liability up to the date of the evaluation. It's for all the service and that people have earned up till that date.
Mr. Parker.
And then, of course, there is, yes.
Sorry to interrupt you, but is it possible that you could share your screen? Right now we see you, but we don't see your presentation. So if you could just share your screen on Zoom, I think that would be helpful for commissioners. And I apologize for interrupting.
It's not letting me share the screen.
I think we've all got a copy of it in front of us. I don't know if you do, but we've got two paper copies and a computer screen.
I'm sorry. It won't let me share the screen with you. The button where it says share is not activated for me. I had it on one, and it has the entire screen to be able to share, but it won't let me do that. So I'll just continue on if you've got the presentation there, and I'll walk you through the slides. So I'm on slide 3.
Okay. Yeah, just let us know what slide you're on.
Recording in progress.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay. So in that slide, as we go through here, you can see the accrued actuarial liability. That's liability up through the date of the valuation. So that's for all service that's accrued up to that point in time. And then you can see the difference between those present value of the future benefits and that accrued actuarial liability. Those are the future costs that are going to be incurred as people work the rest of their career. And that's what we call the normal cost contribution that you would be paid. You had been in an unfunded situation, so your assets were less than that accrued actuarial liability. And so you had an unfunded actuarial accrued liability that was being amortized over a 15-year period. And that was causing your contribution rate on your payroll to be higher than it otherwise would be. So the most recent actuarial valuation is as of June 30, 21. This is just to give you an idea of what that type of thing looks like. We'll actually move on to the next slide on slide 5. And because most of the key information from that slide I put on here. So at 6/30/21, the present value of benefits that we talked about was $81.3 million. Your actuarial accrued liability was $70.8 million. And your assets were $46.8 million. So you could see that your assets were lagging significantly behind that actuarial accrued liability. And the market value of assets is higher than the actuarial value of assets because PSPRS had a very good investment year, 27.8%. And so that difference is being amortized over a 7-year period. So we have one of those years being recognized, but there's still more of that gain to be recognized going forward. Your unfunded portion of your liability was $24 million. And you're 66.1% funded, and your employer contribution rate was 43.47% on your payroll. Now let's fast forward to 7/6/21. You had a significant event where you paid $27.6 million in towards that unfunded liability. You can see that $27.6 million was greater than the unfunded actuarial value of $24 million there. And that brought your assets up from $46.8 million in actuarial value of assets up to $74.4 million. And your market value of assets up to $78.8 million. So all of a sudden you went from being significantly behind to now being ahead. And your funded ratio, instead of being the 66.1, is 105.1. And your contribution rate declined, going from 43.47 down to 13.09. Now let's talk about the risk mitigation that provided to you. Number one, you've got about $3.6 million more in assets on an actuarial basis above that accrued liability. that actuarial accrued liability. On a market value, it's $4.4 million that's higher right now. So you've got some cushion there that's built up. You're also saving approximately $2 million a year in savings on your employer contributions. So those are all things that are positioning you well going forward as you manage your liability. And that's going to allow you, that $2 million in savings is going to be allowing you the budget capacity to be able to pay for that financing that you had going forward. But once that financing is paid, you're really going to be in a much better position. And keep in mind, this is to take care of the liability that you've already had. So if there is a future unfunded liability, you would have had that on top of any unfunded liability that you've taken care of. But you've got some assets here to be able to address that liability. So moving forward to the next slide, again, you can see that by putting in more assets, you're going to be generating a higher investment return, and you're going to be lowering those future contributions that are required from you. And so you're, again, in a much better position. Again, I've used the example before. If this is a marathon and you're running in the marathon, here on slide 7, before your assets were kind of where the left blue arrow is, you are significantly below that actuarial accrued liability, about 66% of that liability. But again, you are better than most other employers in participating in PSPRS, because the overall average was about 46%. Now it's up to about 54%. So you can see that as your improvement on your funded ratio has occurred, so has also many other employers in putting in more money and bringing up the entire plan as a whole. But your liability for your particular plan, you've significantly improved that from the arrow on the left to now the arrow on the right. And again, if you are running a marathon, instead of being behind your pace and being maybe behind the leaders, now you're pacing ahead of the game a little bit. And that's a much better position in which to be able to run your race and to be able to manage your overall pension liability as you move forward. So as you start to consider your options on your funding objectives, I just wanted to present some of these things, some of the facts of where you were, where you are now, and what that does and how that positions you to be able to continue to manage as you continue to address those future benefits and that your ongoing liability, because that future benefit is going to be discounted one less year every year as you go forward into the future. And you've also got new employees coming on board. They're going to be earning different salaries and different objectives. You can have different investment returns as that goes up and down. So you need to continue to manage that and then be able to periodically review your funding objectives to make sure that they're tracking well to help you be able to manage this pension liability. And with that, we'll take any questions that you may have.
Any questions from the commission?
A couple of things that I'd like to ask about. One is the inflation assumption that the actuaries are using, or 2.3%. And as we all know, that's nowhere near where we're at today. The second related issue is that the assumed earnings assumption is 7.5%.
7.3, correct.
It is 7.3, okay.
Yeah.
I noticed that in the footnote of the financial statements that if that rate was to decline by 1%, the required pension funding just on that alone is nearly $10 million. Realistically that, speaking, what's likely to happen in terms of the interest rate assumption and the inflation assumption as we go forward?
Yeah, keep in mind that the financial statements, as you go through there and look, it's important to manage that. And yeah, that can change your pension liability if it's 1%, but it's not 1% in any one year. It's 1% over the time that you're amortizing that and you're factoring in the pension liability. So that would be 1% over a sustained long-term period of time, not 1% in any given year. In any given year, for example, the year before last, our investment return was 0.91%. That was significantly below the assumed rate of return of 7.3%. Of course, last year was 27.8%. That was significantly above, way significantly above. It's the all-time high in earnings that the plan has ever had. So that's what you're going to see, is that volatility. The key is look at the longer term. And if you look last year, I don't have that slide here, but I'll just walk you through that. Essentially, not only last year, the 27.8% was well above the assumed rate of return, but also the 3 year and 5 year were about 10 point something percent. But more importantly, the 7 year and 10 year were about 7.9 and 7.8%. So you could see over a longer term period, it's tracking. Right now, it's above the 7.3%. And that's what you'd want to look at and keep watching, is if those long terms start to get like approaching 1% or more away from the assumed rate of return. Of course, if that were to happen, the board would likely consider potentially lowering the assumed rate of return, which would increase the contribution rates and create a different glide path to be able to provide the funding necessary to get to the amount of money that is necessary to pay out the future benefit liability. Does that help?
Yes, it does. But I do note that a lot of pension plans, public particularly, since they're about the only ones that have defined benefits anymore, they are in fact lowering their assumed rates of return well below 7.5%.
Yes, some have. North Carolina, for instance, went down, I think, sometime last year. I believe it was about the middle of the year, maybe about May to July time frame. They lowered theirs to 6.5%. But yet, if you look at their actual returns, and this is before they posted their returns from last fiscal year, they were still averaging well above that. So I think that some of those pension plans are just inherently trying to manage on an ultra-conservative basis. And so that's why they lower those returns. Of course, one thing that the PSPRS board considers is their ultimate concern is for their trustees, for the members and the employees and what they need to have to be able to have that pension met. But they also consider the impact on employers as well, because it's not healthy for employers and consequently healthy for members and employees if the assumed rate of return is artificially low and it drives up those contribution rates either. So I think that there's a really healthy balance, and that's what the PRS board is trying to achieve, is making sure that there's a healthy balance for the impact of those contributions so that you can manage things appropriately in the long haul. But yes, you're absolutely correct. They're paying attention to inflation as well. That growth rate has been higher than what it has been historically. But they're also looking and will be paying attention as inflation happens, that if salaries start to increase more than what that growth rate is, they may consider some other course of action and take that into consideration as they're managing the pension at a high level.
Thank you for those answers. One other quick question. You changed portfolio management quite significantly. Any comments on that?
Yeah, the portfolio management really hasn't changed as much the last couple of years or so, about 2.5 years. Mark Steed has been the chief investment officer for about the last almost 3 years now, I believe. And so really, when he came on board, he took a good look and went to the board with some recommendations about changing the strategic asset allocation. And especially in light of pension reform and what they're able to do, because the permanent benefit increase, as we had talked about to the full town council, that was what drove about 80% of the unfunded pension liability leading up to pension reform. And so by getting rid of that, they were able to make better decisions on the investment side, not trying to just control the investment returns to be able to manage the PBI. And so now they're able to take better full advantage of the upswings like last year in the market, as well as being able to mitigate some of those downside risks. So I think that that's well positioned going forward. We have independent consultants that report directly to the board that are responsible for monitoring and reporting on the investment strategies. And what they've been reporting in some of the recent investment committee meetings have been how well the portfolio was not only captured the upside last year, but also is built to withstand downturns in the markets. And I think that's a key factor in being able to have long-term investment returns.
Thank you very much.
And by the way, that strategic asset allocation drives about 92% of your investment returns, because really what you're trying to do, you can't control whether the market is going up or down. It's really the diversification of the portfolio. So how do you perform relative to the markets going up and down? Because everybody's portfolio, just like your retirement, my retirement, et cetera, they're all going to go up or down with the markets or interest rates and whatever you're holding your money in. But the key in managing that portfolio is how does it move relative to the markets when you're in an up or down cycle? And so hopefully that gives you some additional light as well.
Thank you. Any other questions?
On your slide, you show us at 105.1% as of July 6th. What are your thoughts on should the town continue to make contributions as if it had an unfunded liability, or should we, you know, maybe let up on that and see how we go from year to year? What would be your suggestions there?
I think you're already on a real good glide path. You can certainly continue to monitor it at this point. I don't know that I would make additional contributions. If you have additional cash that you want to consider doing something with, one of the options, and we could talk about that another time, things would be to consider a Section 115 trust, putting some dollars in there. That would give you some flexibility in how you manage that liability going forward and when you contribute that. But it's certainly up to you. If your funding objective is to be at maybe 110%, a healthy range, by the way, or I should say a range before it becomes unhealthy, is really approximately 80% to 120%. And so but anytime you start falling below 100%, it should be a concern, because now you're falling behind. Again, in my analogy of the race, it's if you're falling behind, you're going to have to expend additional energy and resources to be able to catch up. And then you've still got to have gas in the tank to finish the race, right? So I think that staying at or above 100% where you're at is really kind of a sweet spot. And so I would suggest kind of waiting and seeing where things are at. But look at what you're, if you've got cash on hand, what can you do with that cash? What are your investment options? If it's one-time cash, do you have other one-time needs that you want to address in the city? This gives you an opportunity to be able to do that and to potentially be able to make investments in your city or in your town where is appropriate. But you can always consider how do you want to manage that pension liability, and having some dollars in a contingency reserve and being able to manage that on an ongoing basis, because at some point in time, there are going to be ups and downs and fluctuations. People could live longer, or with COVID, you could get an actuarial gain because people are dying sooner than anticipated. So that could affect some of your older retirees and things as well. And so that's unfortunate for them. You don't want that bad news on from their perspective, but it does help your pension plan. And so you just want to prepare for how is it going to help you manage going forward. And that's why these risk mitigation amounts are going to be important, because that gives you some cushion and some essentially a little bit of a rainy day reserve to be able to help manage your pension liability going forward. But you are required to review your actuarial valuation every year. If you have an unfunded liability, you have to post that on your website. And also now, as of the last fiscal year, the legislature last year required that you also need to report that plan to PSPRS so that we can report it back to the legislature for all of the employers in the system.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, are there
anything else?
Any other questions? Anybody else have questions? Okay, well, thank you. We really appreciate this. We're definitely in a better position now, I believe. Made some actions that we've taken, and we appreciate you coming to share this with us.
Yes, anytime that you have any questions or need anything, David's great to work with, so just reach out to us, and we're glad to help.
Okay, thank you so much. Item 4, Allison.
Agenda item 4, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2021-2022 financial update through December 2021.
Okay, there we go. Okay. Good afternoon. Just bear with me, if you will, so I can use the clicker here. Let's see. If you wouldn't mind bringing it to a slideshow presentation? Is that, are we all set? Oh, I'm sorry. We are already set. Okay. They're ahead of me. All right. Wonderful. Good afternoon. Chair and Commission members, I'm pleased to be presenting our financials through December now, so we're half the fiscal year underway here. I'll go ahead and walk through some of the changes that we're seeing. Overall, very positive in all of our funds. Today we'll be covering the typical funds that we cover, the General Highway and Community Center Fund, and then we'll also be touching on the Water Utility and Stormwater, which we always do halfway through the fiscal year. So we'll start with the general fund and the revenues. Things still looking very positive there on our local sales tax. Just for some perspective, we are currently up 20% year over year through December compared to last year. We budgeted about flat for that revenue source. So in the general fund, We are expecting as a year-end estimate, you can see we're already at 59% of budget through December. We're expecting to come in about $2.6 million, or almost 13% over budget. And that's just due to a strong performance, really, in all the categories. You know, construction, we're seeing the impacts of that heavy SFR activity that we had last fiscal year. Retail is looking great. Just overall, all around strong performance. Our state shared revenues, we are expecting that source to come in over budget by about $457,000 or 3.3%. All those categories, with the exception of the vehicle license tax, are trending over budget. And we also have a year-end estimate included for what's called our police smart and safe funds. That is essentially the marijuana tax that's being shared with cities and towns. Our year-end estimate for that is $225,000, and that was not budgeted just because it's such a new source for municipalities. So that's included in the year-end estimate, as well as some positive trends that we're seeing in the state share sales tax and the urban revenue sharing or shared income tax as well. Charges for services, I don't believe we've changed that estimate since last month. We are expecting to come in over budget by just under 7%. Or about $165,000. We're seeing some strong improvement in our recreation revenues. We have adjusted, as a note, our fare box revenues. So those fares have been waived through the end of the year, and so we won't be collecting those. But that's really not too big of a portion of that revenue category. So the strong growth that we're seeing in the recreation revenues is making up for that. Licenses and permits, we are at a total of 79 single-family residential permits issued through December. As a reminder, we budgeted 275, so we are seeing a definite slowdown there. However, we have some commercial projects that are in the pipeline or already starting to churn through, and that is actually forecasted to offset the shortfall that we're going to see on the residential side of things. So licenses and permits currently forecasting to come in a bit over budget there, just under $2 million. Our grant revenue, one of the adjustments that we've made since last month, and I'll see if I can explain this fairly succinctly, but the final rule for the ARPA revenues is $10 million unrestricted. So we are able to budget, or able to recognize, rather, $10 million of the ARPA funds without really any strings attached. We do have, you know, spending plans for those monies, but there is no restriction to recognizing them. So based on what we posted last fiscal year, of that $10 million, we recognized $4.4 million last fiscal year. And so this year we're going to be booking $5.6 million in recognized revenues to total $10 million. And then the remainder of our total allotment is about $15.4 million. That remainder is going to be more of sort of the siphoned off restricted portion, where we will have to demonstrate, you know, the full adherence to those particulars in the plan that they had put through the, you know, water improvements and that kind of things, those very specific categories. And that spending won't occur till a future fiscal year. So that year-end estimate has been adjusted for the grant revenues to reflect what we'll be recognizing this year. And then our all other category, that includes our other intergovernmental revenue, such as our RTA reimbursements, interest income, and miscellaneous revenue. I don't believe that category has changed since last month. That slight overage is due to the RTA reimbursements for transit. In total, our general fund revenues are currently at 55.4% of budget through December. We are expecting to come in significantly over budget, $50.7 million for a total. And that is due to, again, our outperforming sales tax collections and our strong state shared revenue collections as well. All right, moving on to the expenditures for the general fund. Not a whole lot of changes since last month. Personnel, we are at 43.3% of budget. That is just due to the actuals for the timing of payrolls that have posted through December. We are expecting a little bit of a savings there just due to some vacancies that we've had during the fiscal year. Operations and maintenance, budget of $22 million. You can see we've spent just over 68%. As a reminder, the actuals do include our $10 million payment to PSPRS. And we've also factored in, I mentioned the smart and safe funds on the revenue side. So we do have to factor in the spending on the expenditure side as well. And so we've split that about evenly between operations and maintenance and capital costs. So you'll see those year-end estimates factor in the expenditure of those funds. Our capital, we're at about 18 or 19% of budget through December, spent just over $200,000. As a reminder, the big chunk of that budget includes some improvements at Westward Look, which I believe are going to start ramping up in April, and then some IT needs and parks and recreation improvements. And as we mentioned previously, our transfers out, this is really where we're going to see the bulk of our budget variance here on the expenditure side. We had budgeted a full debt service payment for our pension obligation bonds, but the principal payment, the first one's not actually due until next fiscal year, July 1 to be exact. So that is the variance there. In total general fund expenditures, we've spent about $31.2 million, or 50.9% of the budget, and we are expecting to come in about $60.1 million. And again, nearly all of that budget variance is due to the transfer for the pension obligation bonds. Here is the chart for the general fund. You'll see the revenues, $26.1 million compared to $26.7 million. That doesn't need to be a concern because just to put it into perspective, really that variance is being driven by the grant revenues. So last year, the $26.7 million that you see there included the $5.3 million in CARES funding that we had received. Our current year figure of $26.1 includes $3.3 million so far of recognized ARPA revenues. So really, when you back out those variances, you come up with about a 6% year-over-year increase. So I didn't want that to cause any concern there. That's really what's driving that difference. The expenditures, obviously, $31.2 million compared to $18.6 million. The big bulk of that is the payment to PSPRS. Just as a reminder, we budgeted to spend about $14.2 million in fund balance in the general fund. We are currently estimating to utilize about $9.4 million. That would bring us to an ending fund balance of about $23 million, or about 42.7% of budgeted expenditures. And that does exceed Council's 25% policy by about $9.5 million. Moving on to the highway fund, really the only change in this fund from the November financials is the update to our HRF revenues. So those are trending very positive. They're up about 5% currently. We are expecting those to come in about $250,000 or 7% over budget. And so that's been factored in. You can see the total for the highway fund revenues. We are sitting at collections of about $1.9 million, which equates to about 52.6% of the budget. And really that overage is driven almost entirely to the additional HRF revenues. Highway fund expenditures, we're still assuming on budget for these categories. So personnel, the actuals, same as with the general fund, the actuals reflect the timing of the payrolls that have posted thus far. Operations and maintenance, some spending underway there, about 41% of the budget through December. And then our capital, you can really see now as we've worked our way further through the fiscal year, some of those payment preservation expenditures posting, as well as a Lambert Lane overlay CIP project that was in that fund as well. So in total for capital, we've spent about $1.6 million, or about 71% of the budget. And again, that's trending as expected. That's due to the timing of the payment preservation program and then any CIP projects that are in the fund. In total, as I mentioned, no budget variance noted at this time. We're expecting to end on budget in the highway fund for the expenditures. The chart for the highway fund, pretty standard here. We've got collections of $1.9 million compared to $1.8 million last year. And then expenditures up just a smidge. That's due really entirely to particular capital projects that are budgeted in that fund, as well as the timing of the payment preservation program invoices. We budgeted to spend about $443,000 in the highway fund. We are now expecting to only spend about $183,000. That's really due to the additional HRF revenues that we're expecting to collect. And that's going to land us at about $1.1 million in the highway fund for the end of the current fiscal year. Moving on to the community center fund, not really a whole lot of changes here since last month. Things continue to look very positive. for both the contracted side of things and the town. The contracted operating revenues are at about 53.1% of budget through December, or about $1.9 million in collections. We are expecting those to come in just under 9% over budget, which is about $320,000. They're really seeing strong performance in their member dues and their food and beverage. Town operating revenues, those are still trending quite well. We're at just under 80% of budget already through December. We're expecting to come in about 38% over budget, or about $365,000. And that's really just due to the strong recovery in those recreation program revenues. But we're also seeing some positive trends with the fitness member dues as well. Other revenues includes our half-cent sales tax. That's the big chunk in there, as well as contributions from our HOAs, interest income, and other miscellaneous revenues. We are expecting to come in about $356,000 over budget, about 12% over for the half-cent sales tax. So very positive there. Obviously, the good trends we're seeing in the general fund are true for the community center fund as well. In total, we've collected about $4.1 million in revenues in the Community Center Fund, which is just under 56% of the budget. And we are expecting to come in over budget by almost $1 million at this point, 12.8%. And that's due to a combination of things really across the board, you know, the sales tax, the half-cent sales tax, fitness and recreation program revenues, and then the golf revenues. Expenditures, things looking positive there too. For the contracted operating expenditures, we're at about $2.3 million spent through December. That's just over 48% of the budget. They are anticipating a little bit of savings due to O&M and personnel. Their O&M costs are expected to come in about $200,000 under budget, and then about $50,000 in personnel savings. Town operating expenditures, estimated to come in about on budget at this point in time. We've spent about $516,000, or 47.5% of budget. Capital, that's projected on budget at this time, not expecting any variance there. And then our transfers out, we've mentioned this in previous months. We did budget a full payment for the Parks and Rec bonds, the newly issued bonds, but we will only have an interest payment due this fiscal year. In total, Community Center Fund expenditures are at just over $3 million through December, or 38.5% of budget. And again, that variance, a year-end estimate of about $5.9 million compared to budget of $7.8 million, and that's due to the budget savings for the transfers out, as well as the outperformance in the contracted expenditures. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund. Revenues, you can see all those positive trends we're seeing there, $4.1 million collected compared to $3.2 million last year. And then the expenditures up just a smidge, $3 million compared to $2.8 million last year. As a reminder, we did budget to use fund balance of about $400,000 in this fund. We are now sitting at an estimated surplus of $2.4 million. And that's going to bring us to an ending fund balance of about $5.1 million. And finally, touching real briefly on our two enterprise funds, the water sales are trending above budget. So those are at about 55% of budget, or $7.7 million through December. We are expecting a little bit of a budget overage there, about 2% or $273,000. As you recall, 2021 was a very wet monsoon season, so seeing some positive trends there. In case you were curious, the miscellaneous revenues reflect a lien release collected from a developer. Obviously, that was not budgeted, so that is the amount that you see there in the miscellaneous. Expenses for the water fund, they are currently not anticipating any variance. They're trending as expected through December. They total about $10.2 million, or 49.5% of budget currently. And finally, the stormwater fund. We've really got just one major budget variance to discuss there, but it's a break even when you look at the bottom line. Stormwater revenues, we've collected about $766,000, or 44% of budget through December. We are expecting to come in about 13.4% below budget, but that is really due to a project, a capital project that we had budgeted in there. We thought maybe it was going to funnel through the town, but it's actually going to go through Pima County. So we have basically peeled off the grant revenue reimbursement for that project, as well as on the expenditures. You can see those are trending slightly below budget. We are expecting those to come in under by about 19.4% or $450,000. And that's really due to that CIP project. It's going to go entirely through Pima County and won't be funneled through the town. That is my last slide, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay, Mr. Beasley.
Thank you, Wendy. You indicated the ARPA funds are now unrestricted. Is there a timeline where it has to be spent? Can we bank it? I mean, what's the story?
Commissioner Beasley, I believe it needs to be allocated, not spent, by the end of 2024, is what I seem to recall there. So we've got a little bit of time still.
Yeah, if I may, Commissioner Beasley, Madam Chair, December 2024. So that's the date where we need to have those funds encumbered and have a purpose for them, have contracts let, that type of thing, not necessarily spent, not cash out the door, but have be obligated for spending those resources.
So does that say they are required to be capital dollars?
Commissioner Beasley, Madam Chair, members of the commission, not necessarily. They are considered revenue loss. The provision in ARPA is that they are considered revenue loss. So they could be utilized for operational needs or purposes, not necessarily capital. But we would certainly, as a town, just best practice, our policies, financial policies, et cetera, we would want to allocate those resources toward one-time uses, not ongoing uses like salaries, wages, and that type of thing that would continue on well into the future.
Do we have ideas about use for this, or is that still in process?
Madam Chair, members of the commission, that still is in process. That will be part of the budget process this year. I certainly have some ideas. I'm sure the town manager has ideas, and her ideas will win over mine. But yes, and the council may have ideas as well, and their ideas will win over hers. So that's just kind of how it works. But yes, there are more needs, and there have been some deferred maintenance and items that the town has been putting off that we will look to tackle and get those knocked out rather than continuing to kick the can down the road. Also, we're looking at them from an investment standpoint in terms of what brings the greatest return on investment for the town. So all of that is factoring into would be factored into our recommendation to town council for approval.
Is there an update for what's going to happen with the irrigation systems on the golf course? Is that purely next year's budget then?
Chair Beasley, I believe we are going to start seeing some construction underway in May. The work will begin. So that was a budgeted project this fiscal year, and that work will be beginning here in May.
Was that budgeted in a community fund?
No, Commissioner Mason, or Vice Chair Mason, I guess I should say. It was actually budgeted in the capital fund.
Go ahead.
A couple of questions here. You mentioned that the federal grant revenue, that you have some remaining funds, it says the town received will be posted as deferred. Why is that?
Well, based on the final rule that was issued, basically it was $10 million free and clear of your allotment. You get to recognize $10 million without really any strings attached. And like I said, we obviously have a plan to spend. We've got more needs than dollars, but the $10 million you can recognize really without any restrictions. The remaining portion of your allotment. It's going to be more of those specifics that we had talked about in previous meetings, mainly water improvements. I think it was fiber. There were more specific hoops to jump through, if you will, to recognize and spend the rest of those dollars.
But have we met all the eligibility requirements for that additional $5,000?
The $5.4 million? No, I think we've got more. I may have to defer to Dave on this one, but I think there may be more groundwork that we need to do in order to get there on that piece.
Yeah, if I can just jump in there, Madam Chair, Commissioner Mason, or I should say Vice Chair Mason now. So the issue here is we haven't received the second tranche of ARPA revenues or ARPA receipts yet. Those are expected to be received in June of this fiscal year. That's when they were budgeted, that's what we expected when we prepared this fiscal year's budget. So that $10 million, what does that include? Well, that includes really kind of the balance left over that we weren't able to recognize as revenue for last fiscal year, even though we received $7.7 million last fiscal year in June. We only recognized about $4.3 million of that ARPA. So there's a balance left over of about $3.5 million, roughly, give or take. And then we to get up to that $10 million. Well, that leaves about $3 million left to that we could recognize for this in the second tranche. But then there's another $4.5 or $5 million even beyond that that. That we would have to recognize or be able to recognize next fiscal year, but we would need to again satisfy eligibility requirements for those for recognition next fiscal year. So, so really, it's the timing of the receipt, kind of interplaying with that final rule from the Treasury that we received on January 5th, 2022. So it was something that is very recent. And kind of truthfully delayed us issuing our financial statements. We were ready to issue our financial statements well before January 6th, but we had to kind of wait. We were waiting for kind of that final rule, issue from the direction from the Treasury regarding those ARPA funds. It was impacting our grant revenue recognition, and so. So that's really what's going on there. It's kind of, again, the receipts kind of juxtaposing with that $10 million and how that plays out from a timing standpoint and what we're able to recognize from a generally accepted accounting principle standpoint.
So we haven't received a certain amount of that. So if we haven't received it, why are we deferring it?
Yeah, so... Let me take a step back. So we're deferring like the 5.4 million plus. I think we're deferring about the 5.4 million. I think that's really what we're able to defer. That $10 million we don't have to defer. But the 5.4 million we would have to defer because there are eligibility requirements associated with it. With that said, this is all predicated upon us receiving that second tranche, which everyone expects. I mean, there's not really any issue there. It's from the federal government, right? So so we do expect to receive $7.7 million in June. That would bring us up to a total receipt amount of $15.4 million, which is what we expected. But $5.4 million of that, the $15.4 less the $10 million that we're able to categorize as revenue loss and categorize as really unrestricted without any strings attached, that $5.4 million we will defer as revenue for next fiscal year. It's unearned revenue this fiscal year because even though we've received it, we haven't satisfied the eligibility requirements for recognizing that revenue this fiscal year. I hope that clarifies it.
Yes, that did. Thanks. And just one other question. On the HOA payments, was there a time limit on that?
Yes, the bulk of those has a due date of April 1st. So we have already invoiced those, and those funds should be coming in here soon.
Do they go on for so many years?
It's a five-year agreement.
It's a five-year agreement.
Vice Chair Mason, yes.
Okay, thanks.
One question about the sales tax. this, the local sales tax and just all of the, even the state shares, state shared sales tax seems to be increasing continuously. And do we have a thought on what that is? Is part of that maybe even inflation?
Chair Silverson, yes, we do believe some of that is due to inflation. Just, you know, the sheer fact that if goods are more expensive, the calculated tax is going to be more as well. So that's certainly driving it. But then just recovery, you know, we're particularly seeing growth in brick and mortar retail versus remote collections. We saw explosive growth in remote collections last year. Now, not so much. Those are about flat. The real growth we're seeing right now is retail. And then construction is still performing very well, likely from that residential activity that we saw last year with permits. You're welcome.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Wendy.
You're welcome.
I think we wanted to go back to the previous item, if that's okay, Allison. Item three, presentation and discussion of PSPRS pension funding and related pension funding policy. We didn't discuss the and related pension funding policy part of it.
After you moved on, you really shouldn't go back. I'm sorry.
Okay, then I will. Well, we can add that.
Can you add
time.
That to a future agenda? The next.
We'll
agenda.
Do that. We'll add it for next time. The next on the agenda is Council Liaison comments. Mayor Winfield, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. I want to congratulate you for being nominated by your peers and Vice Chair Mason, and congratulate Mr. Beasley for dodging those bullets. There's always next time. Mr. Gephardt really spoke to the topics that I was going to speak to. I will mention that our retreat this Friday, I think of all the boards and commissions, this particular commission, I would certainly welcome your attendance at this retreat. We're going to be covering topics that I think are important to this commission. There will be the financials, but I think also a five-year forecast as part of our agenda, plus the two-year capital improvement and 10-year capital improvement. So topics that are certainly important to this commission. And while you likely won't be able to participate, I think just your presence and being being a part of those presentations would be valuable. I know you're busy folks, so if you can make it, wonderful. I understand if you're not able to. But that ends my report, Chair Halverson. Thank you.
Can you give us some information on the retreat, please?
Yeah. So it's at the Westward Look Resort. I believe it will begin at 8:30. And conclude at 4. You can arrive at 8. There will be some breakfast snack items. And then there will be breaks and lunch. I think you'll want to bring your own lunch. I don't think we're providing lunch for the audience. But, yeah, okay. So 8 to 4, Westward Look Resort, and... yeah, I think it would be, if you're able, I think it'd be well worth your time.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have future agenda items. So I guess I would like to ask, pardon me? Had the pension funding policy, put that on there. We can discuss that next time and muddle it over for a month. Anything else anybody has for future agenda items? From the commission? No? Okay. All right, then I think that's it. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned at 5:06 p.m. Thank you all.